of kid.
All I gotta say is Portland can't say shit.
It's scintillating. It's sensational. It's Seattle Sounders FC soccer.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another edition of Sounders Scuttlebutt. I'm your host, Nicholas Biella, and I'm joined here today by the wonderful one and only Cameron Collins Esquire. Is it Esquire? What is
that? Yeah, it is Esquire. That's correct.
All right.
It's technically Reverend Dr. Cameron J. Collins Esquire.
I mean, I got the Reverend, but I have officiated some weddings, so
Yeah,
that's another story altogether. So welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I got some food in me, so I'm not as bummed about the Sounders game we're about to talk about. But you know, it's a point on the road, so we'll leave it at that until we get into the actual discussion.
Yeah, and I mean, we are for timeline. We are talking about 30 minutes after the end of the game. It is Saturday night, and it is, just an interesting game. So we're trying the post-game special for some immediate effects. We're going to, you know, see how that goes. Don't know if that's going to be a regular thing for road games or not, but we'll kind of go. Aaron, yeah, unfortunately could not join us today, but we miss him nevertheless.
The double whammy of missing. Oh, wait, but he missed last episode because of his mother-in-law, and he's missing this episode because of his mother. So too many moms in his life.
I know. And I mean, let's start with our timely, unfortunately, death watch.
Why do people keep dying?
It's been an interesting week. I mean, if you are a fan of early 2000s reality TV celebrities, this was not a good week for you.
It was.
Or if deaths come in threes, you had Ozzy Osbourne. Then you had Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other prominent celebrities that were
reality
shows in the early 2000s?
Reality shows. I don't think Malcolm Jamal Warner was ever on reality shows, but I think I was
alluding to, you know, maybe. Hey, that's two. That's two.
We're waiting for a third. but we did lose Theo Huxtable as well, and we lost, is it Mangione? Is that how you say his last name?
He's a Syracuse, New York native.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Feels so good. I believe so. That feels right. I could be wrong on that.
My cousin got quite mad at me for criticizing Hulk Hogan on the day he died, but Hulk Hogan's done a lot of real crappy stuff in his life. He was a hero to me as a kid. I literally have his autograph. I wrote him a letter, actually to get an autograph from my cousin. But man, he kind of sucks.
Well, I mean, first off, Ra-Cha-Cha, the Rochester, not Syracuse. So just about 45 minutes west. You know, I think a lot of us of this generation feel the same way, where we grew up on Hulkamania. You know, I grew up in those 80s WWF era. I touched $1 million belt. My dad was always
way.
Oh, yeah. Like, my dad was always great. He would try and get us, you know, good seats to things. And as an 8-year-old, I had floor seats for a WWF show in Buffalo. And put my hand out and touched $1 million belt as Ted DiBiase walked by, and Virgil was following close behind him and smacked the shit out of my hand. Just whack. Like, how
was this a house show or
that?
Was this an actual?
I'm pretty sure it was a house show. I didn't know that, so that was a thing at the time.
It wasn't on Raw or whatever the equivalent of Raw was.
Raw wasn't even. It wasn't even a thing.
Yeah,
but I guess the way, you know, I do remember that night. Ultimate Warrior was there. Jake the Snake Roberts, Ravishing Rick Rude. No Andre the Giant, but yeah. George the Animal Steel. But yeah, so there was a quote that I've seen passed around a couple times this week that kind of sums up that I can understand and respect. It says, "I've never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with great pleasure." definitely a complicated figure. You know, he burned a lot of friendships in the WWF world. I mean, Jesse Ventura tried to unionize the wrestlers when they weren't getting their due. Hogan ratted him out. And, you know, that's why, you know, Hogan was getting paid more than all the other wrestlers combined for Hulk, WrestleMania. So he didn't want to upset the status quo. Obviously.
I mean, he did my cousin's credit. His point was, my cousin is a huge wrestling fan, has been a wrestling promoter before. He did so much to make wrestling mainstream, which is absolutely true.
100%. That Hulk and Andre, absolutely. I was very lucky. I actually had a friend who was a wrestling promoter, an independent wrestling promoter out of Syracuse, New York, 2CW, Squared Circle Wrestling. And it was lasted for a little over a decade. And so we would often have some really cool conversations about, you know, the behind the scenes business of, you know, WWF. And at that time, you know, I used to spend a lot of time on kind of a earlier version of The Athletic called Deadspin, which was a really good sports site, had a lot of really good, interesting articles that weren't necessarily like news about who scored what, but more like independent journalism about sports. And Hulk Hogan,
legit before it sold out.
That's what happened was Hulk Hogan sued the shit out of them because of the sex tape or the phone calls.
Yeah.
And they basically,
there's a really good documentary on it.
Yeah. And so they got the name back. And then once they went back live, they basically just tried to, you know, white glove it.
Yeah. And it just wasn't the same. And they had to sell the brand and everything.
And I wasn't a scab. You know, there's another guy that's involved in that. And I can't remember his name, but he's a real piece of work. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, they made mistakes. Don't get me wrong. They did. They had some questionable journalistic stuff that did lead to their downfall. But the entire Hogan thing was funded by someone else who.
Peter Thiel. Is that right?
Yeah.
That feel right? Yeah. Anyway, so the whole thing is, and to be fair, what made Deadspin great was they were writing articles that other people weren't, covering things that other people weren't. What it meant was it was by people who weren't necessarily journalists.
I mean, it was Gawker Media by then, but that's around it. So
yeah, but like some of those, you know, they were presenting stuff without some of the journalistic practices that were needed. So anyways,
listen, don't forget, Peter Thiel is one of the largest J.D. Vance and Trump supporters and is behind some of the most nefarious stuff in their campaigns.
I mean, he's part of, anyways. So that's why once
this is
that bumped down, I actually haven't gone into Deadspin until, frankly, earlier this week was the first time in maybe 5 years I've gone on, just because I wanted to see if they're reporting on him.
Yeah, interesting. Hulk Hogan died. We feel many things about it, but I once recorded an episode of my podcast, Punk Rock Pariah, talking about how I wouldn't even celebrate Osama bin Laden dying because I don't think it's appropriate to celebrate anyone's death. That doesn't mean I'm not happy that he can't hurt any more people, but it's far more complicated than that. So,
yeah, I think that's actually very fair. And to that point, actually, because I used to work in media, I got my degree in communications, radio, TV. I pay very close attention on a academic way on how news is presented. I'm just fascinated by it. It's just something really popular to me. The night Osama bin Laden died, I was watching alternating between how Fox News and CNN and The Independent, which is one of my favorite go-to places, The Independent out of the UK, independent.co.uk, NPR. But what I thought was the most comprehensive coverage and was really, really good was Al Jazeera. And
they were set, they were a complete, I mean, for a long time, a really good news source.
They were for a very long time. And then I think politics got involved and all that. But just,
I mean, much like any news source, funding is important, right?
But yeah. And just because they were the news source that was often receiving tapes from Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein and such, doesn't mean that they were the ones that were promoting it. But no. Anyways, just media will forever be something very fascinating to me, and I will never fully extricate myself from it.
I mean, they're owned by the Qatari government, right? But BBC is owned by the British government, and they still do some decent coverage of things, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, get that beer open.
Yeah, I got to do that. Anyways, I think that's enough scuttlebutt. Let's talk about the Sounders game. Or do you want to talk about the All-Star game a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to skip the All-Star game. Did you happen to listen to the last episode of the show with the Ultras?
You know what? I was not able to.
Because I want to get your reaction to this as well.
Okay.
It was without Dan, who I did invite to join us tonight. Sadly, he could not be with us. We're going to bring him up from the minor leagues to the big boy podcast for a night. But the Rave Gala was last weekend. And as you know, I went and it was super fun and happened to have the Heritage Cup in my trunk. And so Dwayne, the president of the Alliance Council, was like, hey, bring it in. And so I did, and we got a bunch of pictures with different players, which gave us a chance to interact with players. You know, Paul Rothrock was amazing, spent some time talking to us, told Pedro de la Vega all about the Free Pedro movement from our Discord. When he was leaving, he came back and said bye to us and was like so friendly and so nice, like so awesome.
I hope his hand gets better. He broke his hand earlier this week in training. Yeah, so yeah.
Yep. We had lots of players come over and visit us. Schmetzer came over, had something to little say about New Who to us and, some other stuff, but really, the event of the night for me, just because it broke my heart, was getting, Rusnak, Albert, to take a picture with the trophy and us. And, you know, we were just talking to him and he was like, oh, I didn't get a chance to see it because he had been subbed off. So he was he was actually excited to see it and hold it up in the picture. Amanda from the Alliance Council was like, oh, you're my mom's favorite player. And he was like, oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize Seattle fans liked me. I thought they didn't like me. And it just really hurt my heart that he said that because, I mean, there's not a lot of chance for him like there is for other players. And I think he gets a lot of unfair criticism. And you and I both know that Aaron loves him and preaches the work of Rusnak constantly and his involvement in plays. And we've both, you know,
I'm a pro Albert. Yeah.
I know. So it made me feel really bad that he felt that way. So I hope that I was like, no, man, you're my assistant goal king. What are you talking about? So I hope he has a little bit of feeling better about the fact that, he has some support because it just kind of broke my heart that he felt that way because he is and continues to be such a big part of this team. And you can tell when he's not on the field, like it hurts the team.
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly putting up DP numbers over the last 2 years that are just absolutely fantastic. If you're looking at, you know, just blind, double blind situation, you're just looking at stats, you'll take that kind of production out of your DP any day. Some people just have a hard time conflating salary or expectation. And you know what? He's producing. End of story.
Yeah. And he would be producing even more if we had a number nine DP that was on the field consistently. That's not a knock on Jordan necessarily. That's just a fact, right? Like,
he'd have another, you know, 3 to 5 goal contributions a season. You know, I think that's probably accurate. I don't want to say too many more just because Danny's had a good season, but they're different styles of play.
Yeah. So it's a bummer, man. Like, I don't ever want any player to feel like the fans don't support them, because even in times where we're critical of players, they're still Sounders players, and I'm still going to support them no matter what they do.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's very fair.
No, I won't say no matter what they do. I'm not a big Mark Birch guy, but you know what I mean.
I do. But that's one of the strengths of the Sounders, is that largely we have historically put together a roster of people that are easy to root for.
One more bit of scuttlebutt before we get to Sounders. Your 2025 Western Conference USL 2 champions.
That's right. Ballard FC. They are playing in the national semifinal tomorrow.
It's Final Four for the Western Conference? Okay, that makes sense.
Final Four for the nation. Final Four.
But I thought they were onto the final. So that makes more sense to me. I didn't understand how they only had two. But Ballard is hosting them on Sunday at 5:30 p.m. At Interbay Stadium. Because I guess they played at Seattle U in the round before, which I did not realize. But Flint City knocked off. Say that again?
I was just going to say, I wonder if there was a scheduling conflict.
There must have been, yeah. And you know, Seattle U is a great place to play. Championship field, not as many seats, but there has been multiple national championships won there on that field at different levels. And not only that, it is where one of the teams is going to be training during the World Cup next summer. They're not just training down at the Sounders clubhouse. There will also be another team that their training is at Seattle University, which, since I have access to that building, I might just go try to hang out with some World Cup players. Maybe that's how I get into the game.
That's going to be really, really tough to do on a security ops situation, but I get what you're saying.
Oh, I still have access to the gym. I can use my card to scan in.
You'd be surprised.
Back in high school, and granted, it's been a long time. Back in high school, it's where the road players used to always come play. So every once in a while at Seattle Prep, we went over to Seattle U for gym, and we would peek in. And I remember seeing Shaq there one time when Orlando was in town, and some other people. Manchester United trained there a few years back. I think it was when they played Celtic here, maybe.
Okay.
And also when they played the Sounders, when that we lost 5-0 that game, was that, and who was the goalie that got that ended his career in that game? It was our backup goalie. He had been our USL keeper, and he hit his head and got a concussion on the goalpost.
Not Josh Ford? Or was it Ben Dragovan?
Yeah, I think it was
Terry Boss?
Or Terry Boss. That's probably who it was, Terry Boss, now that I think about it. Because Dragovan, I don't know if he actually made it to the – did he ever make it to the Sounders pro squad?
I thought he did in the first year, but I could be wrong.
He might have. But, yeah, that was unfortunate. But, yeah, Ballard FC playing Flint City Bucks, who beat Minneapolis City, unfortunately, who's a team I support because my friend Nate started their one supporter group, lives in Minneapolis. And they've always had awesome jerseys. For a while, they had the best jerseys in the country. So it'll be cool to see if we can make it to another final.
Yeah, I mean, we this is our third Western Conference title in four years. LRFC's great.
The other side, Vermont Green, like Dothan United, and Vermont Green with some of the best jerseys in the country. Wow, that would be really fun for Vermont versus Ballard.
I haven't seen those, to be honest, so.
Oh, yeah, you'll check them out. Vermont Green historically has some of the coolest jerseys around. Okay. Just super fun with what they've done. And Bernie Sanders likes to shout them out. Bernie Sanders.
Wow, that's right. But they did beat Lions Bridge, and that's who we beat when we won our national title.
Nice.
So they beat them. So much like Ballard FC, Lions Bridge FC has been kind of a perennial powerhouse. And
I threw that Vermont Green FC shop there in the chat for you there, Nicholas. So you can get a chance to check it out. I know you probably don't want to have to spend money on more jerseys right now, but their wildflower kit is pretty fun.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Even the pre-match top is nice.
Mm-hmm. And their home kit is just their main one is good too. So they've done a pretty great job over there at making a little soccer community. And so it's cool to see.
I like it. I mean, that was one of the things I liked about the Saturday soccer pop-up shop that came out last week. Was just going into the store and seeing kits from all over the world and just being expired. Literally as earlier this morning, this afternoon, I was creating our pub league jersey for our pub league theme, which I can't announce just yet because it's not public. But so I love jersey design.
I saw your inspiration. I'm excited for that.
It'll be fun. I love what you're doing as well for yours. So that'll be cool.
If you're still on that page, scroll down. Oh, geez, there's a giant spider in my wall. Go away. Scroll down to the Electric Pine goalkeeper kit. That's pretty cool, too. The way they've worked in a pine tree into their goalkeeper kit.
Pine trees. Let's see.
On the first page at the bottom.
Yeah.
Everyone else, just go to the VermontGreenFC.com and hit click shop, and it'll come up.
Yeah, I see the training tops, but I do not see the goal. Oh, way down. Okay, the maple goalkeeper kit.
Two above that.
Oh, gotcha. I'm like, are we going full Super Troopers? Are we chugging that bad boy? Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, I like that.
Oh, I hit the spider. No, now it's on the ground. What am I doing?
He's gonna get his revenge.
I have to burn down my whole house.
R.I.P. Cameron. R.I.P. Cameron.
No. All right, I'm taking my shoes off the ground and putting them on this William Shakespeare book over here so that the spider can't get them.
Ooh. Yeah, so all interesting right. Week in MLS. We had the All-Star game. Messi no-showed, and so they promptly suspended him for today's game, and I'm impressed that they took that step. News.
Yeah, him and Jordi Alba.
Yeah. And that game ended in a 0-0 draw against Cincinnati.
Oh, that's big because they would have made a difference.
Yeah. Was not a fan of the Minnesota St. Louis City game because Yeboah had by the way, that 2-1. So Minnesota St. Louis City 2-1, three penalties.
Yeah.
Just, and that was Victor Rivas as a center ref. But no, I just don't like Yeboah did that like really egregious stop in the middle of his run up. It just bugs me. I wish they'd change the laws of the game on that. Like, hey,
if you're gonna make the goalie stay on the back line, you can't let them do that too.
I would propose that the moment a player begins their move, goalies can come off their line.
Yeah.
There you go. He moves, the whistle blows. The moment the player moves, then everything's fair game.
I like it. Works for me. Did you see what happened in the LAFC LA Galaxy match with the red card at the end?
I saw the score line, but I did not see the results. I did not see how we got to that point.
In the 91st minute, Eddie Segura grabbed
I did
LA
see that
player by the back of his neck and head. It wasn't like he was choking him, but you can't touch.
But he just had a stupid moment, and he cost his team the 3 points.
Yep, because LA Galaxy got a goal in the 97th minute to go through after Gabriel Peck came back and had a penalty and a 79th minute goal. So, man, if Gabriel Peck's going to turn on, the Galaxy, we know how they can be, right? How bad they can be and then come on at the late season. They're a team that you have to watch out for if they get good. Like, I'm not writing them off.
I mean, even today's game, this might be a good segue. Atlanta has a good offensive minded team. They just haven't been able to get everything going this year. I thought, well, are we ready to start talking about the game?
Yeah, we can. We do have some mailbag. Let's see how much is related to the game. Looks like most of it is game related. So we'll hold off until later. Why don't we do this? We'll take a break. We'll hear the Patreon promo and then we'll come right back.
Sounds good.
Hey everybody, this is one of your hosts, Cameron Collins. Now, I know we said this time was time for a break, but really, it's a time for me to talk to you about our corporate overlords. And our corporate overlords are us. That's right, we would love it if you would head on over to patreon.com and look for Sounders Scuttlebutt Podcast. We will put the link here in the show. And subscribe. You can subscribe for as little as $1.74 a month. Now, what will that get you? Well, I'll guarantee you get at least one extra episode per month. That'll be a cool interview or something like that that otherwise you would not hear. Now, we might put out promos or other things that include that, but the whole episode intact will only be available for you Patreons, at least initially. Now, there will be other stuff that we put in there, but this is where we're starting at. Why, you ask? Well, we have bills to pay, and we need to make sure that we can keep this show going. You would not believe the going rate for PA announcers. So head on over to Patreon, go to Sounders Scuttlebutt Podcast, and subscribe. You even get a cool little downloadable membership that has our logo on it. That's Sounders Scuttlebutt Podcast over at patreon.com, patreon.com. Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
And we're back. Yeah, we played today. Recording on game day. I got some food in me, so I'm not as grumpy as I was, like I was saying beforehand. Let's start from
that
the
helps.
End. Let's start from the end and then go backwards, just because we know the final score was 2-2. What an incredible goal, though.
Yeah, I
the Atlanta player.
Yeah, Ronchuk.
I mean, obviously there was more the Sounders could have done to prevent that, but you gave him the space and he took it. And oh my God, there was no way Andy was stopping that ball.
No, it was a really well taken shot for literally the last kick of the game. When I look at the last, ever since the Club World Cup, really, I look at the Sounders' goals that they've allowed, and it's been penalties and weird things. There haven't been a lot of just, oh, the Sounders got beat. Even that, like that was a really good individual effort. So I kind of take that as a encouraging sign to a degree. But at the same token, you know, you have a lead going into stoppage time. You got to hold on to that. I feel like between that's 6 points minimum we've lost this season between Charlotte at the beginning of the year, Colorado just recently, and then this game. But at the same time, that's the 34 game season. You're going to win games late. You're going to lose game late. You're going to drop results late.
But 6 points. That pops us up into second place, tied with Minnesota. So
I know, but then there are games where maybe we shouldn't have won and we did, sure. So you got to take the good with the bad sometimes with soccer. So I don't want to harp on that too much. I do want to say, as we're starting and going backwards, one, congratulations to Baby D-Ro.
Yeah.
Osase Rosario getting his first MLS goal. He had a great look from a beautiful cross, which would have been, I think, his first touch of the game. Alex Roldan just gives him a wonderful cross from the wing right to his head, and he just puts it wide. But he redeems himself with that 5 minutes into stoppage time goal. Great play there between Kent and Nuhu. Two players that have been in the doghouse for various ways. I think Kent has just not been getting the playing time he wants, and I think he is obviously going to be frustrated about that. But hopefully it's both confidence boosts for both of them. But I thought Kent did really well in that build up to the goal, and I thought Nuhu just put a really nice cross right over to D-Rose's head. So really well done by the Sounders there. So great job.
Yeah, and honestly, it was before that point because D-Rose came on, but we had moved Jesus up to forward, and it just kind of felt like, all right, we're just mailing this in and going for the tie, and then they ran
it. I don't know.
And I mean, I know that's never Schmetzer's plan. He just didn't want to give up a late goal, but it feels like shoring up the defense never, or midfield really is what it is. Shoring up the midfield never seems to help us late in matches is my takeaway, just because that, at least last year we saw, and it was different midfielders. It was largely Atencio, but we saw several games where late subs really hurt us.
Well, for context, in that 77th minute, we subbed off Danny Musovski, and we subbed off Reed Baker-Whiting. But then we put in Kalani Kosa-Rienzi and Nuhu.
Yep.
But we already had Alex and now Nuhu on the field. So Kosa-Rienzi was playing up a level. And with the way he gets into the attack, so that was more of an attacking sub for that. And that pushed – so that basically pushed Jesus up to the forward position. And that was only for 12 minutes.
Right.
Because in the 88th minute, that's when we brought on D-Ro.
Yeah.
But at that time,
on offense, and I felt like it felt like step back during that time.
Well, to your point there, my favorite thing, the possession graph, or not the possession graph, but the momentum graph, when we subbed off Danny and Reed, the next like 10 minutes were all Atlanta. So you're not entirely wrong there. But I thought that's also at the same time we took off Pedro, because we took off Pedro 3 minutes later for Ryan Kent. Pedro, let's talk about that first goal for the Sounders. Cool. So we're defending. At first, I didn't know quite what happened because the cameraman was focused on the clearance that they didn't focus on the counterattack. But this is once again, we talked about this like two episodes ago, maybe three episodes ago, where we're lamenting that we wish the Sounders would try and just make quick possession a little more often. And this is like the third straight game where we've had that happen. And so it's just really nice to see that change up of attacking styles within the game where it's not super predictable all the time. And big credit to Yamar for booting that ball up to, I believe it might have been Albert who flicked it on to Pedro. I don't know for sure. I'd have to check the replay, but Pager was off and running a 3-on-1, and it was just really well done. I thought he blasted that ball short side on hey, say what you want about Grzand. He's a veteran goalkeeper who knows better than to allow a goal short side.
Yeah.
So Pager just outwitted him. And again, it's a 3-on-1, so he's got to cheat a little bit to a degree. And so they just took advantage of the numbers and just really well executed.
Guzan is a great MLS level keeper. I don't want him starting for the U.S. national team, but he's consistently near the top.
He's had a long career. He's had a very, very good career. I think it speaks volumes that a team like Atlanta, who have had ambitions ever since they came into the league, he's been with them ever since he came to the league.
Yeah.
So for, I would say at the beginning of that reign, he was probably on the higher end of the goalkeepers in the league. And now he's kind of more middle, but he's not a below average keeper. I mean, you saw it last year against Miami in the playoffs. He was befuddling them. I'll respect. I think what you said is perfect. Very good MLS keeper who had some time overseas, but don't want to really need to see him in the U.S. And fortunately, we won't need to.
Yeah. Speaking of keepers, though, I do want to give a shout out to Andy Thomas, who played a fantastic game. Both goals, there really wasn't anything he could have done on either of them.
No, and he made some good decisions coming off the line. Didn't have to make a lot of saves, but he did have to really take control of his box, and I thought he did that pretty effectively.
Yeah, so let's jump to that first half real quick in general, because, of course, they scored on an own goal.
Do we have to?
Was it the seventh or ninth minute early on? I blocked it out.
Yeah, it was seventh minute.
But the RBW mistake, recovery from Yamar, just kind of bounces off his knee, doesn't totally get in front of the ball and goes into the goal at an insane angle. Nothing Andy could have done, kind of the opposite of when we almost scored on an own goal in the second half, but it didn't go in when it hit off the far crossbar. But I felt like the first half is kind of a typical Sounders road game we've come to expect, where we're just not showing up and it's just boring and we seem tired. That wasn't the second half, though, obviously.
I don't know how to analyze it, because defenders were slipping left and right. Mm-hmm. We were just getting overwhelmed. But we just kept making those key defensive plays, like a great run from Obed to chase down Latela, who was off to the races with a lot of acres of space. And not only does Obed chase him down, but he wins the ball at the top of the box instead of fouling him or giving up a free kick or a dog so at that point. It just really, really well done. But I unfortunately think that Miguel Almiron had his way with Reed Baker-Whiting today.
Rough day for Reed.
Yeah, he didn't shine great on that first goal. Kind of got burned at the top of the box, and that created scramble mode. But a lot of that first half just felt like scramble mode. I think that's the best way to describe it. It just felt like the Sounders could not get comfortable in that first half. That's the way it looked to me.
Yeah.
Even though they had possession.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It felt like one of those games where a team has figured out how to create dangerous plays against us, but also how to stop our crosses from doing anything. And generally the answer then is to figure out a different way to bring the ball. That's when we see the over the top balls that used to go to Jordan when he would go on those runs when we're struggling to get through the wings, but we don't have that kind of speed at the top anymore. So I don't know what the answer is, but clearly whatever Freddy Juarez saw they were able to bring into the second half and make some differences. I'm curious what you think about the fact that we have to make those changes at halftime. I mean, I felt the same way about the Seahawks with Pete Carroll, is the way I've talked about it, where sometimes the Seahawks would be just down by too much by then. This case, we were only down by one, and we came out in the second half, and we looked like a much better team, and it paid almost immediate dividends. How do we get that analysis from the coaches coming in quicker to make? I mean, I guess you're afraid to make changes in the first half, so maybe it has to do with changes, but something changed clearly. They didn't make subs at halftime.
Well, it's a good point, and I think that's a question I'd love to really pick Brian's brain on the next time we get a chance to meet with him.
Yeah.
Because it really is a great, great question. But, you know, it's not, I think it's a little disingenuous to say that it's just all a halftime adjustment, because you can hear and see coach giving instructions to players during the run of play during the game. So this does happen. But you can really
season
adjust better. Yeah. Yeah.
Where they
and not just season, historically, that's been kind of a hallmark of Brian Schmetzer.
That's what Freddie War is his job. That's why often he's been earlier this season. He was up in the booth the first half and came down and after making the changes.
Yeah.
So we've seen him have that amazing ability to do it. So it's, and it makes sense, I think, from a, psychological perspective, when there is a break and you can convince players to make different changes in their game because you can show them film, you can show them different things. I didn't notice this. I'm curious if you saw this. During the Club World Cup, they had all those little TVs in front of the coaches, and I was wondering if that was going to continue in the MLS season, and they did. When they came back, you would see like Schmetzer having a little TV in front of him for replays. Is that something they showed? Did you happen to see that on TV? I'm curious if that's something that's continued as the league has gone on. So they're watching, you know, a play from across the field, but close up, and they're seeing film immediately to see what changes they can make on the fly.
Well, I mean, other sports have their version of that, you know, the tablets and the the prompters. So I think it's just giving the coaches technology to compete effectively. I don't have any problem with that at all, as long as both teams have an opportunity to utilize it, you know.
I mean, it's no different than, you know, someone being upstairs and coming down and telling you what to do. It's just you can make changes right there. So you got to be careful, though. Some of those players like throwing those tablets in football.
Well, yeah. I think today one of the things that was really interesting was recognize that Atlanta have had a rough season. It's certainly not going, you know, it's not going at all how they expected this season to go. They, you know, they spent, you know, what, 30 plus million on transfers in the off season. You know, so they kind of expected, you know, a level of competence with that. And to a degree, we saw that with their offense today. I think that we really did see why they are, you know, why they are dangerous.
Yeah.
But did you happen to catch Guzan's interview after the game?
No. I turned it off when they were, I think, right
before
I did that.
It was very clear that he's exasperated, that, you know, he's thrown his own team under the bus a little bit. Ronnie Dyla threw his team under the bus this last week. They just have a lot of they're getting in their own heads. They're frustrated. So
I mean, they're fans. They made that trade. Was it last week where they sent Efren Morales over to Montreal, which is a 21-year-old Bolivian international, for 450,000 GAM, and it could go up to another 350,000 GAM added on top of that. And they kept his sell on rights, but or you know percentage, but their fans.
But that's 100%.
Yeah, they were attacking
Henderson
on it, and it's funny because I went into one of the comments like, look, I would give anything Anderson back in Seattle because he made so much out of nothing here. Obviously, he wouldn't come back because the position he would be in doesn't exist. Like, there's not a level that high here.
Well, I think in this case, and this makes a lot of sense to Montreal, because if you're Montreal, you struggle to attract talent. So when you can get someone with some strings attached, you know, and take advantage of a situation like that, that's a big win for them, I think, on that case.
Sure. But I think
kind of mutually beneficial.
One thing we've learned from having multiple talks with Craig Weibel, from creating a relationship with Garth Lagerwey, mainly those two, I would say, is that sometimes you trade a player who has talent because they're not going to be able to start on your team, and you do it for them so that they have
Josh Atencio.
Yeah. Loaning out Danny Leyva. I mean, there's Sam at dinner on
Henry Wingo.
Yeah. They're talented and they just maybe don't have a path to starting anytime soon. And the reason you do that isn't just for that player. That's going to keep other players wanting to come play for you, because then they go, oh, so if it doesn't work out for me here, they're going to do me a solid and help me down the road somewhere else. And so I'll give a shot on it trying to play here, which is something that may not occur otherwise. So I don't really have a problem. Sometimes you have to give up talent in order to, you know, appease that talent. Or this is the same reason we let Oba go, right? Like, Oba was going to be terrible in the locker room, not because he's a bad guy, but because he didn't want to be here.
That's his career path was always, I'm a mercenary. I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, his tables and chairs of different teams that he played for, that's just who he was.
Right. And so
at the same time, I mean, that's the same thing as, you know, reputation matters. So you think anyone's going to want to go to Boa Vista in Portugal? There's no way in hell. Boa Vista is the team that keeps failing to pay the transfer fees of players that they get. So no one's going to do business with them anymore. You know, Reggie Cannon just won his lawsuit after he wasn't paid. They were trying to use a transfer fee from another player to pay another transfer fee. Just some really shady, shady shit. Like, who's going to want to do that? So who's going to go to a team like that? Just really interesting. But so, yeah, reputation matters. And I think honestly, that's why we got Ryan Kent.
Yeah.
You know, he took a chance on us with what we've proven. Now, I really am not closing the book on Ryan Kent at this point. I think today was a good step for him.
Yeah.
I thought today hopefully give him some good some good momentum going into League's Cup. Because I got a feeling we're going to see him quite a bit during League's Cup. I think we're probably going to see a little bit of Danny Leyva, who hasn't been getting a big run out. So we'll see.
I thought it was interesting, though, that when Kent came on the field, suddenly we were pushing far more towards the right than the left. And he came in for Pedro on the left, correct?
He did come on for Pedro, but I don't know.
I'm curious.
I don't know how it was lined up at that point.
If there were players, because ultimately the goal came from the left. Obviously, it was Kent and Nuhu over the top.
He was in his normal spot. Yeah.
So I'm curious as to, and I noticed that during the games at home sometimes, because they'll come my direction a lot more, which is to the right if they're playing towards your end in the Brome end, and then other times they're playing towards the left, and it seems like there's certain personnel on the field that prefer to go one direction over the other, and I wonder how much that is on purpose or if it's just like, oh, I feel more comfortable passing it this way to this person. And I'm never really sure if it's like we're going to try this and try that based on the defensive matchups, based on who we're seeing
is their tired. Patterns of play.
Yeah. Or if it really is just in that moment, you're pushing to the right, especially after Rusnak comes off, because he's really the quarterback out there pointing which direction to go throughout the game, even when he doesn't have the ball.
Well, you know, the other side of that, though, is I do want to point out there was that moment where I think it was maybe Obed who tried to launch a cross slash through ball to Kent streaking up the middle. And it just took a center back making a good play to prevent that shortly after he came on. So he was kind of not just staying to the wide side. He was getting involved into the play a little more than maybe usual. So, yeah,
true.
Hopefully that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Let's hit some of these mailbag questions real quick that we had.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's kind of.
First one, why did we look scared to take shots from outside the box? I feel like we haven't been taking a lot of shots from outside the box in general. We have scored some in the last few games, but throughout the season, we're much more likely to cross it because that's our game, for better or worse.
Well, you're right. But you got to remember, you got to freeze frame. Where are we at these times that people are like, oh, take a shot. One, if you're in a spot where the passing lane or the shooting lane's not there and that gets clogged up, that is an immediate turnaround transition the other way.
Yep.
And so you have to be smart.
Tired defenders.
On how you do it. Now, there are times where, yeah, you see the situation, you're like, shoot. And unfortunately, just the mindset it takes to recognize the situation, to set your feet up to take that, you know, when you're stepping out, you need like a two-step run-up. You need that chance to get, you know, some power behind the shot. Sometimes it's just not there. The MLS level defenders, they close down faster than you think.
Yeah. I will say, Jesus at times seems to hesitate more than I thought he would have, based on the way he played a lot when he was younger. And I don't know if that has to do with not being as familiar with his teammates as being, you know, if when Areola was out there, they knew each other forwards and backwards. They could play without looking at each other. And so it very well could take a while to learn your team, especially when we're having players come in and out constantly. I agree with you, especially late in that match. That bounces off the defender and deflects back the other way, and suddenly they have a breakaway. Well, that's when dangerous things happen.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other side is that I thought we saw over the last few weeks, I think we've seen Jesus just looking a hell of a lot better. I mean, he's always shown signs of good stuff, but then you're seeing measurable impacts as well on the score sheet, which obviously a lot of people are going to look to that first and foremost. So I'm pretty pleased with how Jesus has been playing.
I'm still surprised, and maybe this is the League's Cup that will change us, that we haven't seen Ryan Kent get a run out at that position, because I think Ryan Kent has the opportunity to really level up that position compared to where Jesus has been. Now, Jesus has been playing better. He's been scoring goals, but not in the last few games. And I thought there was some room there. For whatever reason, we've seen players need to prove it before they get that chance to be on the field regularly. And we saw Pedro prove it. And now I think that's his position on the left to lose, which is tough for Paul, because Paul is an amazing player. But you can't sit Pedro in a meaningful game at this point, like an actual league match.
Yeah, but at the same time, this team hasn't been able to keep people healthy all season long. So, you know, just give it a week.
Yeah. And Paul's hand obviously being broken is a bummer, but thankfully that's something that with surgery and a club on his hand, he can make it through pretty easily, I think.
Yeah. Although, you know, he's going to play with some fire and grit. I'm curious to see how that changes when he's got a clubbed hand.
He just might get a red card. Like the old days with Carl Mecklenburg for the Denver Broncos, their scary linebacker dude who had a big club in his hand. He's swinging it around at people. So another question.
That's a deep cut right there.
Does Andrew look ready to take the mantle once Fry retires?
Yeah, I would have said yes last year.
This year, I feel like you saw
it's going to be different.
A little bit of a struggle early on when he was playing, but I think these have been some solid games for him lately, especially these last two.
Even before that, I mean, he's sure. not stopping the penalties. That's okay. He's not the one caught. Oh yeah, he did cause a penalty.
but Fry doesn't really stop the penalties either until that playoff win last
year. It's house money. Yeah.
Yeah. He had stopped.
It's house money.
He had stopped like two or three in his whole career that weren't like kicked off the bar.
I feel much more optimistic when Andy's about to take a penalty versus Fry.
Yeah.
With Fry, it's just a matter of, like, I hold my breath going, oh, even if he makes the save, he's going to come off the line.
Yeah.
And it's going to come back. And that's not fair, but it's also not unfair. But again, if this is a situation, penalties we get maybe once every, what, 3 to 5 games, we face a penalty against us and over the course of a season, you know? So if we have one moment every 3 to 5 games, that is his weakest point. I'll take it. And then even taking that a step further on the statistics side, take the best penalty shot stopper in MLS. He's going to save that, what, every, you know, 15 to 20% of the time?
Yeah, not that often.
So if you're taking 15 to 20%, so that means theoretically if you're getting a penalty every, you know, 5 games and, you know, 20%, then that really means that, you know, once a season Fry's missing out on a penalty save that another goalkeeper is saving.
Yeah.
So I don't want to harp on him as this as his big weakness, because all the other things he does day in, day out, game in, game out, save a lot more goals than that one goal that could have been saved. It is his big weakness,
but it's not, he makes up for it in other ways, right? Like no player is an all around perfect goalie.
Yeah. I mean, if that's his big weakness, there are much worse problems to have. I would rather have a goalie that is guaranteed never, ever, ever to save a penalty, but excels at every other, but is going to lead the league in shutouts every year or be top three in shutouts every year.
So I would take the average that in a heartbeat. 17 to 20% by goalkeepers on penalty kicks, which Fry is significantly lower than that, but
yeah,
17.5 according to CEFRARQ.
Okay, so I would take that trade off 100%.
Sure. No, here's the thing: we were just lucky to see Nick Raimondo play in our stadium quite a few times, who was one of the greatest penalty savers ever. If not one of the greatest goalies of all time. What a dude, man. I like that guy. Let's keep it moving. I think there's a double question here. New who in or out, or new who subbing on late as our new closer?
Do you want to start with this one or do you want me to start?
I'll start with this one. We saw Reed have a tough day, and I think New Who doesn't get run down like Reed did during that game. But they bring different things, right? So Reed is going to make us more offensive generally. Yes, New Who had an assist today, I think largely put in that position by Ryan Kent. You saw another play when he came up and tried to run forward, and everyone was back, and he's like, oh, and he kind of went, oh, and ran backwards. But, I don't think you bench Reed because of one game. I think if New Who has earned the trust of the team back, which Coach Messer said, it isn't just about the coaches, it's about the team, you give him that opportunity again. He is one of the best defenders at defense in the league. And so if he can keep his head on straight and the team can trust him on the field, then I think everything's good. And you start him.
Well, I think in this particular case, one, keep in mind, yes, Reed had a bad game defensively. But with his offensive with his offensive skills and the way that changes a team like Atlanta, it's got to keep them somewhat honest so they can't just pin their tails or their ears back and just attack, attack, attack. They have to be aware of that. So that dynamic changes a little bit when new who's on the field. But I would rather see a game like today where we just struggled defensively. Yes, knew who is the better option out there.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised to see him not start the first League's Cup game against Cruz Azul.
Reed or Nuhu?
But I knew who.
Hmm.
But at the same time,
I don't know, with Cruz Azul's talent out there, you might need a quality player like Nuhu, like defensive quality player of Nuhu's caliber out there.
You know, this is a really good question. And I'm actually thinking that so when we played them in Mexico City, we had the back three, but that was obviously when Paul Arriola was still on the team, healthy. So we did have Nuhu in the back three.
Mm-hmm.
When we tied them and 0-0, where we definitely were the better team and we were unlucky to get out of there.
I mean,
same thing.
That Pedro de la Vega was not offsides. We won that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time on that one, we had the three in the back.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see how we line up. I'm very curious to see how we line up. Do you think... You think we go with that?
I would have said yes, except for we didn't in the Club World Cup, which is when I thought for sure, including based on things that our general manager said to me personally, that that's what we were going to do against Atletico Madrid and PSG, right? Like that's,
yeah.
I would have said, yeah, we're going five in the back. And then we didn't, and we saw, I don't know if success is the right word. We saw... we played well for our quality of player. I'll say that. I mean, we still saw PSG going 48 times through the middle, 36 through the left. You know what I mean? Like, they were still eating us alive.
Yeah,
goals, though.
But we were not just defending, and hoping for just a long ball.
Right.
We were trying to play our style of game. And I really respect that during this Club World Cup, that we didn't change what we do to go for like the Hail Mary. And I thought that was something that I could really, you know, get behind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ooh. Mariners scored two runs, now up 5-2. That's your episodic Mariners update. During the episode the other night with the ultras was when the Mariners made their big trade, hopefully the first of several, to get Naylor. So that's our Mariners update. So are you starting Nuhu then?
If we're playing Santos or Tijuana first, I would say no, because we're playing Cruz Azul, and that's going to dictate whether we get out of League's Cup. I think we need to get a result out of that game. We need a result.
We don't. I mean, obviously, we won't know if we need one or not, but it sure would help us a lot.
Well, only four teams are gonna get out of it. You know,
right.
so it's just really interesting.
But if Liga MX destroys MLS across the board and we get three draws, we could potentially still make it out. But we would prefer not to have to deal with that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be really interesting, though, because the way that it's set up, it's going to be really interesting to see. I think Liga MX is going to come with some fire. I think they've got something to prove. And I think we're gonna see they're gonna win more games than they lose, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's skip ahead. Two questions coming from Tim Hamilton. Excited to get your takes on these. He has taken over Dan the Bastard's mantle as the curmudgeon of the Discord. Join our Discord.
Hey, wait, first off, big shout out to Tim for tailgating with us last
awesome
game.
Tailgate.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
Really good time. He delivered. He delivered.
Yeah, that was super fun. Definitely will be going again the next time he does a tailgate. Usually that
involves my daughter was wondering why she couldn't have Jell-O.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when it has daddy juice in it.
That doesn't make it sound any better.
Let's get these last two questions though. I'm gonna question put them at as they are because I think your response is gonna be interesting, especially based on what we've already talked about. We'll go with this one first. Does D-Row keep us from spending that sweet couch cushion moolah on Ohio? I wish this was a video podcast right now. The way you're shaking your head, it's like I said it.
Okay. Nothing that D-Row could have done in this game is going to have any impact on us signing Ohio. Period. Exclamation point. Nothing was going to make that change. We are not going to make a change based off of our third string and fourth choice forward and results they get. Let's give D-Row credit. He got his first goal, but you also saw him miss a very good chance earlier. And he's been struggling a bit in Tacoma recently. Tacoma just got rid of their head coach. So everyone's been struggling in Tacoma recently. So let's be careful on the hype train. And let's recognize him for what he is. He is a project. We are not making first team decisions based on D-Row.
No, definitely not. And, you know, this is something that's in the works for a while. So we'll see if it actually comes through. There's obviously, it's gotta be finalized. It sounds like a fee has been agreed to, but you still need to get that, get him into town, get him a physical, and I'm sure they have a physical guy somewhere in, or person, I should say, excuse me, somewhere in Europe that can do the physical without Noah having to come all the way here. I am a little annoyed that if he comes, we're probably going to have to hear that stupid Ohio State chant you love that just shows how inbred they are in Ohio when they're like, O-H-I-O! Yeah! Blue! It's the same bullshit mindset.
I think you've just managed to somehow piss off Ohio State and Michigan fans and somehow Cruz Azul fans.
Yeah, that was meant for
and me. anyone who enjoys listening to our podcast on headphones. So I think you just somehow Venn diagram pissed off all four groups of people. Congratulations.
Michigan, but you know what? I've hated Michigan for my entire life. So I will the football team. I don't have I been to the state? I don't believe I have. So I have no comment on the state itself, but let's get this last one in before we get out of here and get our predictions for the next match. Do we just give Georgie all the minutes we're giving to Kent? I thought Kent had a good game today.
No.
I don't know why you would. I mean, also, if you're going to play Kent on the left, Georgie plays on the right. So I don't see that happening. Depends on where you're playing.
Yeah, I think you're going to – I wouldn't even be surprised if you see Danny Leyva at the 10 with Georgie and Kent up there. I don't hope to see that because the Leagues Cup shouldn't just be like U.S. Open cupping it where we just put people that haven't been playing. There should be a thought behind it, and it's not right, and it's disingenuous to give Ryan Kent minutes but without – first choice talent around him to help set him up to kind of see. You got to set him up for success to a degree. Same thing with Georgie, same thing, any of those players, you got to set them up to succeed. So there is a balance. I expect to see, like, out of our first choice 11 for these League Cups game, I expect to see around five first choice players each game.
The first game I could see us going main starters. Maybe a I mean, not Fry, because we know already that the entire tournament's going to Andy no matter what. So we will not see Fry in the tournament. Uh-huh. But I could see us putting starters out.
Obed Christian, what do you do there?
Question. I mean, I'm giving them a break, I think, but you know, this may
be game's Thursday.
Obed may want to play. Chance to you know, it's playing teams for the national from the country where he's on the national team. May get some minutes in there. So we'll see. I mean, I think I probably shift one of the players out, maybe give Christian a break, but I don't know if you want to shift both. I especially with JP hurt. I don't know. I feel like we need, unless you're gonna move Rusnak back, I feel like we need, which we've seen in the past, we need someone back there with the younger players.
It's too bad we're playing Mexico teams, because otherwise I would be shipping up to Boston. Dude.
God, it's already on Thursday, huh? All right, so Sounders 2, Atlanta 2, bummer of a point because of the last second goal, but hey, point on the road is all you need. We are hosting, actually, we are not. We are the road team against Cruz Azul.
Wait. I do want to also shout out Tim Hamilton, because Tim has made this argument on many occasions. He's been like, I want exciting games. I want offense. Well, you know what? You're fucking getting it.
Yep, we have
The Sounders, since Club World Cup, have scored 2 goals, 3 goals, 3 goals, 3 goals. They're scoring goals. They're getting their opportunities. And so yay for that. Would you rather stay the course and keep getting results, another straight result? So we're getting results. Would you rather get results even if they are maddening at times, where it's draw, win, draw, win, draw, and two of the draws should have been wins?
Yeah, I guess so.
Would you rather have that? Or would you rather have, you know, so would you rather have 3 draws and 2 wins, or 3 wins, a draw, and a loss, but all of the wins are like 1-0.
Yeah. I mean, you know me. I want the most points possible. I don't really care how we win. We can win every game on an own goal as long as we win.
And the difference between that is 9 points in my scenario with 3 wins, a draw, and a loss, but those wins being 1-0 versus 9 points, 9 points this way with yes, you know, 2 wins and 3 draws. So, you know, we're getting those points. So yay.
Yeah.
One less point, but the games are more exciting, even if it drives us nuts.
I love the excitement. I'd love to see that we can score. I guess the ultimate question is, has having a stronger offense stretched our defense in a way that makes it so they will score more goals? Because our defense isn't what it used to be, for whatever reason. Part of that's injuries. Part of that, players just not playing like they have in the past. I mean, Reagan was so solid at the end of this match that I almost feel bad that we didn't get the win, considering how good he was at stepping up and clearing that ball out of the box.
Yeah. But we also predicted this at the beginning of the year in our season premiere or season preview. We were talking about the onus this year was to be scoring more goals offensively, but it's going to come at a cost of defensive, you know, it's going to come at the cost of defensive shape.
Yeah. I'm all about winning championships. I don't care how we do it. You can't take away the star. That's all I'm going to say. I don't care if we win 8-0 versus 1-0, just give me that star.
Well, it's funny the way you said that. I was like, wait, who's the star in this scenario? Are you saying don't take away Jordan? Don't take away Paige? Like, who?
Don't take away that star.
I. It took me a second. Okay, I'm tired. I've been up since 1 a.m. and I got to get up in a few hours. So
it's your bedtime. So what we got to ask you is, Sounders are on the road at Lumen Field this coming Thursday. Yes, it's a road game. Yes, it is at our home stadium against Cruz Azul.
Wait, real quick before you do that. Hey, if you are, you know, if you're a Sounders fan, especially if you're bilingual or even if you're not bilingual, but if you speak Spanish, get involved with the Vamos Sounders Club. It's a free club to sign up. You'll get newsletters about the club in Spanish, but they'll give you 2 free tickets to one of the League's Cup games. Now, the Cruz Azul game, that ticket offer is sold out for those games. They're all gone. But you can get 2 free tickets to the Santos Laguna or Club Tijuana game. Go to the, yeah, so Vamos Sounders. I've got the QR code that I've been sharing with people left and right. I've been actually having wonderful conversations with people about this. I've probably gotten at least 2 dozen people signed up for these games. So I'm pretty happy about that.
But, you need to press conceive with boletos? Is that
correct?
Okay.
Yes, that big green box with the Bienvenidos, the Bienvenidos Sounders. Yeah.
You think I should get tickets to Cholos on Wednesday? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think you should go check that out.
Okay,
you should go check that out.
And there's it looks like you can get tickets in the green zone, the 100 level north corners, or the 200 level corner and upper south end zone. So that is non-club seat corners. But when you're choosing, where are you choosing to sit?
When I go to games, you know, I'm always in ECS, you know,
sure,
but if I'm recommending, if yeah. I'm recommending to other people, I'm recommending them to sit as close to the Brougham end as possible personally. You know, take in that atmosphere for sure.
You know, I don't know if do you get a choice that specific, or do you just have to say where? Mm-hmm.
Because when you click on the zone, it'll tell you which section and which row, and yeah, it dials you in even more.
Yeah, so, okay, cool. Yeah, I definitely will have to do that since I have not gotten used my Vamos Sounders tickets yet.
But yeah, so again, I challenge each of you listening, even if you're not going to Leagues Cup or you're not available, you know, share that link. Share that with someone you know that might be a Sounders fan. Share that with someone who, frankly, doesn't get a chance to go to many games. Maybe it's a financial consideration. You know, just try and encourage them. Hey, go to this game. I believe you also, if you're willing to stand in line, you get a free trucker's hat. I think like a Vamos trucker's hat. I haven't seen the design on that yet. It's a little secondary, but still, the important part, like these things matter to some people. Like I literally have been talking with... right now, my job puts me into many restaurants and back rooms, so I'm getting to interact with a lot of people who English is not their first language, and you know we start talking about soccer, and I explain what this program is. Watching people's faces light up, go wait, free, and yeah. Like yeah, and walking them through the process and seeing them just excited to be able to go to a game, and especially, you know, some of them, you know, grew up watching, you know, League MX, you know, and that was their game. So yeah,
become a fan of a second team, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a great program, and obviously it's successful with the Santo or the Cruz Azul game being sold out. Yeah. From that perspective. Cameron, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, Liverpool, I just got kicked out for a second.
You sure did.
we'll say what you just said again, in case something was lost.
No, I was expecting you to come back in, so I was just kind of winding down and wrapping up.
No, what was the? I need your score prediction for Cruz Azul.
Oh, that's right, because I will be doing the score predictions for these. You know what? If we put our ideal starting 11. We get the 1-0 win. We get the goal we should have gotten, and we take it because we're gonna want some. It's a revenge game, you know, and yeah. It's hard to it's kind of the equivalent of the LAFC, you know. It's hard to beat the same team three times in a year. Even though they did not beat us in the first game, I know that, I recognize that, but we also got our ass kicked in Mexico City, and I don't think the players forgot that, and I think it left a bad taste. So I expect us to treat this with an intensity, no matter who's in the starting 11. So I'm going to say 1-0 in a tough match, and I think Andy's going to make some key plays. I think we're going to get some good moments there, but it'll be a deserved 1-0.
Nice. I'll go 1-1. I think we get the draw we need out of it and move forward.
And that's fair. I mean, I try to be an optimist, and I don't want to root for, yeah. and their season is not starting yet, so they're in a different.
Oh, they haven't played yet, because I think the league itself is like two games in, but
yeah, Cruz Azul has not played yet.
Interesting. Cool.
So
well, I think that's a good
I'm
place
sorry, to... I got that backwards. Nope. You're right. They have played three. They've won one and one drawn two. So okay. I was looking at the wrong thing.
And we don't know their lineup anymore, because I'm sure they had some moves. So if you know, stay tuned to that. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion around that.
You're not wrong. All right. Well, so, Cameron, where can they find you?
You can find me at Legal Minded Punk on all these social medias. How about you?
You can find me at Cascades to See on Instagram. And come find me at Nicholas on Discord. Come join me into our conversations, and let's have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody, we'll catch you next time.
You can follow the Sounder Scuttlebutt podcast on Twitter at @SSFCScuttlebutt. And for all inquiries, including questions for the gents, or sponsorship opportunities, please email contact@scuttlebuttproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show for new episodes following every Sounders FC match. And don't forget to share your feedback by rating and reviewing. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BritVoxus. That's BritVoxUS. We'll see you at Lumen, and go Sounders.
Alexa, who's the best MLS team of all time?
The Seattle Sounders are both unequivocally and irrefutably the best MLS team of all time.